I said nothing. Armored and the infantry run joint exercises all the time, but they run them where the tanks are, not where the grunts are. Much easier to transport men across a continent than tanks.
Oh, maybe he met her at Irwin,
Summer said.
In California. Maybe she worked Irwin, but had to leave California for some reason, but she liked working military bases, so she moved to Byrd.
What kind of a hooker would like working military bases?
The kind that's interested in money, which is all of them, presumably. Military bases support their local economies in all kinds of ways.
I said nothing.
Oh, maybe she always worked Byrd, but followed the infantry to Irwin when they did a joint exercise out there one time. Those things can last a month or two. No point in hanging around at home with no customers.
Best guess, I said.
They met in California, she said. Kramer will have spent years at Irwin on and off. Then she moved to North Carolina, but he still liked her enough to make the detour whenever he was in D.C.
She doesn't do anything special, not for $20.
Maybe he didn't need anything special.
We could ask the widow. Summer smiled.
Maybe he just liked her. Maybe she made damn sure he did. Hookers are good at that. They like repeat customers best of all. It's much safer for them if they already know the guy.
I closed my eyes again.
So?
Summer said.
Did I come up with something you didn't think of?
No, I said. I fell asleep before we were out of the state, and woke up again nearly 4 hours later when Summer took the Green Valley ramp too fast. My head rolled to the right and hit the window.
Sorry,
she said.
You should check Kramer's phone records. He must have called ahead to make sure she was around. He wouldn't have driven all that way on the off chance.
Where would he have called from?
Germany, she said, before he left.
More likely he used a payphone at Dulles, but we'll check.
We?
Well, you can partner with me. She said nothing.
Like a test,
I said.
Is this important?
Probably not, but it might be. Depends on what the conference is about. Depends what paperwork he was taking to it. He might have had the whole ETO order of battle in his case. Or new tactics, assessment of shortcomings, all kinds of classified stuff.
The Red Army gonna fold.
I nodded. I'm more worried about red faces, newspapers, and television. Some reporter finds classified stuff on a trash pile near a strip club. There'll be major embarrassment all around.
Maybe the widow will know. He might have discussed it with her.
We can't ask her, I said. As far as she's concerned, he died in his sleep with a blanket pulled up to his chin and everything else was kosher. Any worries we got at this point stay strictly between me, you, and Garber.
Garber?
She said. Me, you, and him, I said. I saw her smile. It was a trivial case, but working it with Garber was a definite stroke of luck for a person with a 110th Special Unit transfer pending. Green Valley was a picture-perfect colonial town, and the Kramer House was a neat old place in an expensive part of it. It was a Victorian confection with fish-scale tiles on the roof and a bunch of turrets and porches all painted white, sitting on a couple of acres of emerald lawn. There were stately evergreen trees dotted about. They looked like someone had positioned them with care, which they probably had 100 years ago. We pulled up at the curb and waited, just looking. I don't know what Summer was thinking about, but I was scanning the scene and filing it away under A for America. I have a Social Security number and the same blue and silver passport as everyone else. But between my old man's stateside tours and my own, I can only put together about 5 years' worth of actual residence in the continental U.S. So I know a bunch of basic elementary school facts like state capitals and how many grand slams Lou Gehrig hit and some basic high school stuff like the constitutional amendments and the importance of Antietam. But I don't know much about the price of milk, or how to work a payphone, or how different places look and smell. So I soak it up when I can. And the Kramer House was worth soaking up. That was for sure. A watery sun was shining on it. There was a faint breeze and the smell of wood smoke in the air, and a kind of intense cold afternoon quiet all around us. It was the kind of place you would have wanted your grandparents to live. You could have visited in the fall and raked leaves and drunk apple cider, and then come back in the summer and loaded a 10-year-old station wagon with a canoe and headed for a lake somewhere. It reminded me of the places in the picture books they gave me in Manila and Guam and Seoul. Until we got inside.
Ready?
Summer said. Sure, I said. Let's do it. Let's do the widow thing. She was quiet. I was sure she'd done it before. I had, too, more than once. It was never fun. She pulled off the curb and headed for the driveway entrance, drove slowly towards the front door, and eased to a stop 10 feet from it. We opened our doors together and slid out into the chill and straightened our jackets. We left our hats in the car. That would be Mrs. Kramer's first clue, if she happened to be watching. A pair of MPs at your door is never good news, and if they're bareheaded, it's worse news. This particular door was painted a dull antique red, and it had a glass storm screen in front of it. I rang the bell, and we waited. And waited. I started to think nobody was home. I rang the bell again. The breeze was cold. It was stronger than it had looked.
We should have called ahead,
Summer said. Can't, I said. Can't say, please be there 4 hours from now so we can deliver some very important news face to face. Too much of a preview, wouldn't you say?
I came all this way and I got nobody to hug.
Sounds like a country song. Then your truck breaks down and your dog dies. I tried the bell again. No response.
We should look for a vehicle,
Summer said. We found one, in a closed two-car garage standing separate from the house. We could see it through the window. It was a Mercury Grand Marquis, metallic green, as long as an ocean liner. It was the perfect car for a general's wife. Not new, not old, premium but not overpriced, suitable color, American as hell.
Think this is hers?
Summer asked. Probably, I said. Chances are they had a Ford until he made Lieutenant Colonel. Then they moved up to a Mercury. They were probably waiting for the third star before they thought about a Lincoln.
Sad.
You think? Don't forget where he was last night.
So where's she? You think she went out walking?
We turned around and felt the breeze on our backs and heard a door bang at the rear of the house.
She was out in the yard,
Summer said.
Gardening, maybe.
Nobody gardens on New Year's Day, I said. Not in this hemisphere. There's nothing growing. But we walked around to the front anyway and tried the bell again. Better to let her meet us formally, on her own terms. But she didn't show. Then we heard the door again at the back, banging aimlessly, like the breeze had gotten hold of it.
We should check that out,
Summer said. I nodded. A banging door has a sound all its own. It suggests all kinds of things. Yes, I said, we probably should. We walked around to the rear of the house, side by side, into the wind. There was a flagstone path. It led us to a kitchen door. It opened inward, and it must have had a spring on the back to keep it closed. The spring must have been a little weak, because the gusting breeze was overpowering it from time to time and kicking the door open 8 or 9 inches. Then the gust would die away, and the spring would reassert itself, and the door would bang back into the frame. It did it 3 times as we watched. It was able to do it, because the lock was smashed. It had been a good lock, made of steel, but the steel had been stronger than the surrounding wood. Someone had used a wrecking bar. It had been jerked hard, maybe twice, and the lock had held, but the wood had splintered. The door had opened up, and the lock had just fallen out of the wreckage. It was right there on the flagstone path. The door had a crescent-shaped bite out of it. Splinters of wood had been blown here and there and piled by the wind.
What now?
Summer said. There was no security system, no intruder alarm, no pads, no wires, no automatic call to the nearest police precinct. No way of telling if the bad guys were long gone or if they were still inside.
What now?
Summer said again. We were unarmed. No weapons on a formal visit in Class A uniform. Go cover the front, I said, in case anyone comes out. Summer moved away without a word, and I gave her a minute to get in position. Then I pushed the door with my elbow and stepped inside the kitchen. Closed the door behind me and leaned on it to keep it shut. Then I stood still and listened. There was no sound. No sound at all. The kitchen smelled faintly of cooked vegetables and stewed coffee. It was big. It was halfway between tidy and untidy. A well-used space. There was a door on the other side of the room. On my right, it was open. I could see a small triangle of polished oak floor. A hallway. I moved very slowly, crept forward, and to the right to line up my view. The door banged again behind me. I saw more of the hallway. I figured it ran straight to the front entrance. Off of it to the left was a closed door. Probably a dining room. Off of it to the right was a den or a study. Its door was open. I could see a desk and a chair and dark wood bookcases. I took a cautious step. Moved a little more. I saw a dead woman on the hallway floor. The dead woman had long gray hair. She was wearing an elaborate white flannel nightgown. She was on her side. Her feet were near the study door. Her arms and legs had sprawled in a way that made it look like she was running. There was a shotgun half underneath her. One side of her head was caved in. I could see blood and brains matted in her hair. More blood had pooled on the oak. It was dark and sticky. I stepped into the hallway and stopped an arm's length from her. I squatted down and reached for her wrist. Her skin was very cold. There was no pulse. I stayed down. Listened. Heard nothing. I craned over and looked at her head. She'd been hit with something hard and heavy. Just a single blow, but a serious one. The wound was in the shape of a trench. Nearly an inch wide, maybe 4 inches long. It had come from the left side and above. She'd been facing the back of the house. Facing the kitchen. I glanced around and dropped her wrist and stood up and stepped into the den. A Persian carpet covered most of the floor. I stood on it and imagined I was hearing quiet, tense footsteps coming down the hallway towards me. Imagined I was still holding the wrecking bar I had used to force the lock. Imagined swinging it when my target stepped into view on her way past the open doorway. I looked down. There was a stripe of blood and hair on the carpet. The wrecking bar had been wiped on it. Nothing else in the room was disturbed. It was an impersonal space. It looked like it was there because they'd heard a family house should have a study, not because they actually needed one. The desk was not set up for working. There were photographs and silver frames all over it, but fewer than I would have expected from a long marriage. There was one that showed the dead man from the motel and the dead woman from the hallway standing together with the Mount Rushmore faces blurry in the background. General and Mrs. Kramer on vacation. He was much taller than she was. He looked strong and vigorous. She looked petite in comparison. There was another framed photograph showing Kramer himself in uniform. The picture was a few years old. He was standing at the top of the steps, about to climb into a C-130 transport plane. It was a color photograph. His uniform was green, the airplane was brown. He was smiling and waving. Off to assume his one-star command, I guessed. There was a second picture, almost identical, a little newer. Kramer at the top of a set of airplane steps, turning back, smiling and waving. Off to assume his two-star command, probably. In both pictures, he was waving with his right hand. In both pictures, his left held the same canvas suit carrier I'd seen in the motel room closet. And above it, in both pictures, tucked up under his arm, was a matching canvas briefcase.